It's Marketplace Tech for January 14th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. How many times did humans have to take the wheel from Google's self-driving cars on California roads? 13 times during the course of about a year. This was revealed this week, along with other data from companies with self-driving car efforts, after pressure from the Consumer Watchdog Group, which asked for the information. Today, Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox is expected to speak in Detroit about the possibility of the government building out a regulatory framework around self-driving cars. The government's trying to get ahead of technology that is moving really fast, as Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
Elon Musk is talking about selling you a self-driving Tesla in a couple of years. Jonathan Gitlin writes about cars for Ars Technica. He thinks that's optimistic.
From other people I've spoken to in the industry, I think they would say probably 5 years away for most situations.
Gitlin says the technology is advancing rapidly. Car makers want regulation of a certain kind.
If you talk to the car companies, obviously they just want one sort of set of tests that they can pass for everybody.
And we're not there yet. Volvo and Google are testing different technologies. They want to keep the intellectual property. Another monkey wrench is who's going to regulate these cars? The feds? The states? Chandra Bhatt is director of the Center for Transportation Research at the University of Texas at Austin.
You have multiple entities regulating these things. And with the advent of self-driving vehicles, it really starts to blur these distinctions.
Car makers want to make sure self-driving cars are safe for the people in them and to protect themselves from lawsuits. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
While we're talking about driving, Google is rolling out new functionality in its Google Maps app for Android users, Driving Mode. What does it do? Guesses at a driver's next stop and plots a course. It uses your search and travel history to do so. Creepy convenience has to be a genre of technology design by now. Here's a question. When you touch your smartphone, what does it feel like? If you've answered indium tin oxide, you are a nerd, and I will stamp your nerd card for you if we ever cross paths. ITO, as it is sometimes called, is used in 90% of our touchscreens, also screens for televisions. And guess what? It ain't cheap. Why?
There's not a whole lot of indium around.
Because we have been using it. Answer there from Roman Engel Herbert. He's a professor of materials science and engineering at Penn State. He's leading a team of researchers who think they may have a solution, a combination of elements that would work as an alternative to the usual screen material. The name of that combination platter, strontium vanadate.
We're using different types of elements from the periodic table that are simply more abundant and easier to basically get out of the earth. So that's why they are cheaper.
That could mean lower costs for companies. Engel Herbert says the next step is to figure out how to manufacture strontium vanadate on a large scale. His study was published recently in the journal Nature Materials. Everybody's psyched about virtual reality these days. You got HTC's Vive headset, Sony's headset, Samsung VR, so many options. But as we've been reporting, a lot of serious VR takes a lot of serious computing power. That includes Facebook's popular Oculus Rift headset. No, it won't work, at least not that well, with your regular old laptop. That's why venture beat writer Jordan Navet set out to build himself a legit virtual reality personal computer. Jordan, thanks for chatting.
Thanks for having me on, Ben.
All right. Where did the decision come from that you wanted to make your own PC to work with Oculus? Why did you decide to do that?
I looked at the specifications that Facebook made available for the Oculus Rift, and I said, gosh, my MacBook doesn't have any of this high-end equipment. And I said, well, there are a couple of options. One is I could buy an Oculus-ready machine.
Yep.
Or I could alternatively build my own PC.
So give me the rundown here. What are the different pieces of the computer? How much it set you back?
Okay. I paid around $1,400 for everything. And that includes a monitor. That includes a graphics card, an Intel chip, a hard drive to store everything, a solid state drive to store some special things like the operating system, a Wi-Fi adapter, I have memory, I have a case that holds everything, a big case.
You have pre-ordered the consumer version of this, but you're actually working with a developer's kit and you're playing with that?
Yes, a prototype basically of the headset. And so I've been trying out a bunch of apps. Basically, after I get home from work every day, I download a bunch of games to try out. And sometimes it's really fun, and other times I feel nauseated afterward and I have to lie down basically and go to sleep.
How long are you spending after work?
Maybe 1 hour or so, 1 or 2 hours. The thing is, for many games, you just can't take a very long sitting. It will make you feel a little bit disoriented if you're jumping around or flying in the air, and you feel as if you should be going in the direction, but you aren't. Your brain is basically fooled. And it's, I think, the delta between what you think you are supposed to be doing and what your body actually feels that makes you so uncomfortable.
So what do you think? $1,400 well spent so far?
Yes, it is an experiment. And I believe that virtual reality will be an important platform for the future. I'm optimistic about it. And this release feels like the right time to jump in. I have a Google Cardboard. I've played with the Samsung Gear VR. I've tried the HTC Vive, but this feels like something that is going to be around for a while to come.
Jordan Nevet is a writer for VentureBeat.com. Jordan, good luck out there. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me by then.
More from Jordan at Facebook.com/MarketplaceTech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.